WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. The Trump inauguration will move indoors on Monday to the Capitol Rotunda. The president-elect said on social media it's due to the bitter cold that's forecast for Washington, D.C. CBS's Nicole Skanga.
The low on Monday is predicted to be a whopping 11 degrees, a high of 23 degrees. And certainly I was out with the U.S. Coast Guard just days ago as they were preparing for this event by crushing some of the ice along the Potomac to ensure that the waterways were prepped for patrol.
The weather pattern's part of an Arctic blast affecting much of the country.
Certainly law enforcement, from their perspective, moving this indoors would actually make it an easier event to safeguard. There's sort of less visibility than when you're outside. And of course, law enforcement prepared for both contingencies.
This has been done before. The second Reagan inaugural was an indoor event in 1985 because of the cold. CBS News special report. I'm Steve Kathan.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. On Thursday, the Wisconsin Supreme Court heard arguments over the Republican-controlled Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules' efforts to block a ban on conversion therapy in the state. The lawsuit questions whether the committee's rejection of the Department of Safety and Professional Services ban was beyond the scope of their power. The eventual ruling will also impact blocks by the committee on various other state regulations implemented by Governor Tony Evers. The ruling could take months to be announced. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is reminding residents to get vaccinated against respiratory viruses after announcing the first pediatric influenza-associated death in the state for the 2024-2025 season. According to a press release, cases of respiratory viruses like RSV and the flu are high across the state this winter, and health officials are encouraging everyone 6 months and older to get vaccinated against the highly contagious diseases. Vaccination can help prevent the spread of the illness and reduce the severity of symptoms if infected. The Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District is considering changes to the elementary school boundary lines amid declining enrollment. The district held a public informational meeting on the potential changes on Wednesday and created the Elementary Boundary Review Committee to consider possible options. District officials also did not rule out the possibility of closing a school. The school board currently plans to make those decisions by the end of March, and any changes could be implemented for the 2025-2026 school year. A siren man accused of stealing a vehicle after being escorted out of a Social Security office in Rice Lake entered not guilty pleas to three charges. 28-year-old Levi Jacobson was charged with operating a vehicle without the owner's consent, operating a motor vehicle with a revoked license, and possession of THC. According to court documents, Rice Lake police officers were responding to a complaint from employees at the Social Security office when he allegedly took the vehicle. If convicted, he could face up to 3.5 years in prison. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers fire a coach. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. Although the Packers' defense improved the past year, there's been criticism they didn't put enough pressure on quarterbacks. Defensive line coach Jason Rebovich fired after 3 years in Green Bay. Meanwhile, defensive back Jaire Alexander has missed nearly half the games the past two seasons due to injury. GM Brian Gutekunst asked, will Jaire be back?
You know, we're at the beginning stages of just kind of gathering information as a whole, you know, before we started looking at next year and how we're going to lay this thing out.
And Bob Uecker has died after a 2-year battle with lung cancer. Uecker would have been 91 next Saturday.
You know, he beat pancreatic cancer, which nobody beats, but he had another cancer now, and he did the job right to the end, which is extraordinary. And I kept trying to tell him to slow down, Kirk. There were days he would go have radiation treatment and then come to the ballpark and broadcast a game. It's unbelievable.
That's Brewers owner Mark Antanasio with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
A cloudy but warm winter day as high temperatures try to tap 40 degrees. All ahead of a cold front sliding through this afternoon, which could spark up a few scattered snow showers and bringing breezy winds. Gusting up to 30 miles per hour as temperatures fall to the single digits, with wicked wind chills slapped on top of that. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 35.
Matt Nair on air.
Robotaxis made by Zooks. are slated to hit the streets of California later on this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first.
Wait, have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver?
My biggest sticking point about this is the name. Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah. Do you think when he's driving, he's going bubba da bubba da bubba da bubba da bubba da
bubba?
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Luke Mathers joins us now.
The Bucks were playing, the Badgers were hosting Minnesota, and I couldn't get either of those games on YouTube TV.
Years later, they're going to look back at this and go, oh my God, how did you guys get through it? I mean,
things don't happen in a vacuum, though, and you have to elect people that will break up these giant monopolies and allow us to watch our favorite teams in peace.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
On the next show, we'll discuss the life and presidency of Jimmy Carter with journalist and political consultant Candy Stroud before spending some time honoring Dr. King's holiday.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10. 93.5 The Tap.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Allbar Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Allbar.
Hey, welcome to the Todd Allbar Show. Todd's off today. He'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild here, subbing in along with my favorite co-guest host, Angela Lang, the executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, thanks for being with me these next couple hours.
Of course. Always happy to be here.
Yeah, it's always fun when you are. We got a great show for everybody. In the second half hour, Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers will join us. And then at 1:06, Wisconsin's new poet laureate Brenda Cardenas is coming on. And then in the last half hour, Civic Media's own meteorologist Brittany Merlot will join us to talk about the deep freeze coming this weekend and about birds, snowy owls, and other winter birds in Wisconsin, because you know I can't go a show without talking about bird watching in Wisconsin. So it's going to be fun. And you can join the conversation anytime by calling or texting 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Well, Angela, it's been quite a week. How are you doing?
You know, I'm getting over a round of COVID, and I've never had that before. Yeah. Thank goodness everything is fine. I'm very grateful that I was able to work from home, and I had what I think was a relatively mild case, but that wasn't fun. But overall, it's been a wild week. Biden's final address, confirmation hearings, and yeah, what a week to try to come back to the office from winter break.
you never had COVID before, huh?
I know. Somebody said, they were like, you're one of the unicorn people that never had it. And I was like, no, I do. I may have had it in like December of 2019 because I was like really sick at a conference one time. But no, other than that, I've been very careful. And every time I've been sick, I've been, you know, always testing and it's negative. So finally got me after almost 5 years.
Finally got that second pink line, huh?
Yep. not I had to take two. I was like, wait a minute. Really?
It's not a welcome sight. It's kind of like seeing the red and blue behind you in the police car. So, you know, you don't want to get that. And so what were your symptoms? Did you have the night sweats and all that?
I did. Yeah. I had some body aches and some chills, but it mostly just felt like a cold, a cough, stuffy nose. Definitely have had worse scenarios. So I'm very grateful. And also shout out to the BLOC team. They're like, you're coming back next week, right? And I was like, well, you know, if I'm negative. And they're like, just come back next week. So they've been very supportive. It's been good. I've been able to kind of work from home and take a nap in between meetings, which has been nice too.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have a serious case of it, because it can be. I've had it twice and neither time was a lot of fun. The first time I had a rebound case of it. And so I was out essentially for 2 weeks, but I've missed it this time around. So I'm hoping I will continue that streak, but I probably shouldn't mention it. Not that I'm superstitious or anything, but I'm knocking on wood.
Knock on wood.
There you go. So let's talk politics a little bit. We had the hearings this week. What do you make of Pete Hegseth's hearing?
I mean, what was interesting is that the things that he chose to deny, the fact that he said that they were, a lot of questions were anonymous smear campaigns in regards to his level of drinking, him going to strip clubs and things like that. It's very telling when you're just like, oh, that was just an anonymous smear campaign. But like, you didn't deny it though. Like, you should have just denied it outright. So.
Right. And they were, you know, yes or no questions. And he wouldn't answer yes or no. He would just say anonymous smears. He must have said it 20 times.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us, when we saw it, because, you know, he denied some things, which was interesting, because if you're going to use that tactic, I would have done it for everything. Because now there's some things you denied and some things you're like, oh, that was just a smear campaign. Well, you denied other things. Why are you choosing not to deny this?
I can't think of someone less qualified for this job. I mean, here is a guy who's an alleged rapist. He's admitted to having a drinking problem, at least in his past, and said he was going to give up drinking if he got this job, which has to be a classic for people who've had drinking problems. That must resonate at the AA meetings. He's never run a business of any size, and he's now going to, you know, run the Pentagon. I mean, that he's just not, he's not qualified for it. But, you know, there's one thing that hasn't gotten enough attention that really disturbs me. And that is his defense of some very unsavory soldiers who were accused of heinous crimes. There was one guy, Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher, who allegedly stabbed a teenage detainee in the throat to death. And Gallagher was sending texts around saying, got him with my hunting knife. And then he took a picture of himself with the corpse, which he was court-martialed for and convicted of that, not of killing the person, but of taking a photo with a corpse. And then what we had was Hegseth was urging Trump to pardon him, essentially, and Trump went ahead and then did it. Even though the guys who were working with this Gallagher, at least two of them, quoted in the New York Times, two Navy SEALs by name. One guy said, this guy is freaking evil. And another guy said the guy was toxic. And yet this is a guy Pete Hegseth championed. And he talks about the warrior culture. He doesn't believe that soldiers should be held to the Geneva Conventions. And he's going to be running our Pentagon. I mean, this is the, see, there's there's this sadistic streak in Trump land, which really concerns me. Trump himself talking about, you know, beat people up, you know, at his rallies if they're heckling him, or the police should, you know, use a little more force when they're throwing someone into the back of the patrol car. This goes hand in hand with that. And I think it's one of the reasons Trump actually likes the guy.
Probably.
And so for me, all these confirmation hearings, you know, Trump's in charge. Trump's going to do what he wants. And it doesn't really matter that much who the sycophants are, and they're all going to be sycophants. This idea that they're not going to tell the president something he doesn't want to hear is a joke. I mean, the only reason they're there is because he knows they're going to tell him what he wants to hear. But this idea of having the head of the Pentagon kind of saying Geneva Conventions, we shouldn't have to abide by it. It's too tough for the foot soldiers to know what to do. That's sending all the wrong signals, it seems to me, given the kind of scandals we've seen from My Lai to Abu Ghraib. I mean, it's just going to invite more. And I don't think the Democrats said enough about that at the hearings. A couple of the senators waved at it, but they didn't really drive it home in a way that people could understand. You really had to know the background of the story of Gallagher and a couple of the other guys accused of serious human rights abuses or war crimes to know what was going on. And Hegseth doesn't want U.S. soldiers to be held to any war crime standards. So that's who we got. And it looks like he's going to sail through, too. Unbelievably.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, going back to another point, too, and I think tying this all together is, you know, what do we want to be as like a country? Because one of the questions that he was asked, because, you know, Trump had said, maybe you just shoot the protesters in the leg, you know, to get them to calm down. And he was point blank asked, would you carry out an order like that? And he's like, oh, I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals. And then he just continued to talk over. And I think that's something that we as Americans should be very, very concerned about, that he did not deny that he would carry out an order like that. And given all of his background and the people that he's buddies with, I think that it is incredibly dangerous in this country, especially for anyone that wants to push back or speak out against the status quo.
And remember, Trump was saying that about Black Lives Matter protesters. That's who he wanted the military to go shoot people in the knees if they were protesting civil rights abuses by police officers who are killing people in our streets. And the weird thing both about Hegseth and Bondi, neither of them would comment on outrageous statements that Trump made. Just mentioned that one by Hegseth. And then we had Pam Bondi, who she wanted to comment on Trump asking Raffensperger in Georgia for 11,780 votes. She said she'd never heard it. Never heard the tape. It's just, that can't be true. Everyone in America, especially those of us who are interested in politics, heard that many times and certainly read a whole bunch of news stories about it. Mm-hmm. So, and then she denied ever hearing that Trump called the January 6th insurrectionist patriots. I mean, that's a level of trying to take the American people as just being stupid.
It's gaslighting.
Yeah, it's gaslighting. It's, you know, how dumb do you think we are? You know, that's what I wanted to say.
We saw these things, and that's why I tell people all the time, it is so important that we are amplifying voices of people on the ground, whether it's, Block, shameless plug, or like other organizations, because we have people that think January 6th was a school group, you know, like, and we are actively seeing the whitewashing and the gaslighting of history in real time. And I think it's on all of us to make sure that we're setting that straight, because how could you... You know, it's one thing to say, oh, I just didn't see it. Well, great. You're lying. You're thinking we're dumb, or you just didn't come prepared to your own hearing. Like, which is it? Because none of it is good.
Yeah. I mean, it is George Orwell right before our eyes. They are just totally rewriting history. We all watched January 6th happen live on TV as it was coming down. And now they're telling us it wasn't that way, that these were patriots. And we'll see how many of them, of the insurrectionists, of the traitors, that Trump actually pardons on day one. I think Monday, I'm not going to watch the inauguration. I'll read the speech later. The inauguration, you know, I don't want to waste an hour, 2 hours of my time when I can read his inaugural address in 5 or 10 minutes. So, and I'm with Michelle Obama. What was your reaction to that? Michelle Obama decided not to go.
I will say that I immediately was concerned because I know she wasn't at Carter's funeral as well. And I was like, I hope everything's okay, you know, and there's not something going on. And people are like, no, she probably just doesn't want to go. And I was like, oh, okay, well then more power to her. Like, why are we endorsing some of these things? Like, I think showing up, and I understand that there's some elected officials and, you know, Rep. Jim Clyburn said that he's going to be there because he's representing his district. So I do think that there's a balance, but I do believe that Congresswoman Gwen Moore said that she wasn't going to go. And, you know, I applaud folks who say that they're not going to go because they don't want to validate it, or because it is also MLK Day and people would rather do acts of service as kind of a day on something else on that day than actually attend that man's inauguration.
Yeah, I just think Michelle Obama has such a Trump allergy that she can't going to be near him. And I don't blame her 1 minute for that.
Not at all. Yeah.
And so, I'm interested in what the viewers think, whether they're going to be watching, the listeners here are going to be watching the inauguration or not. Give us a text. Here's a text we had from Andrew from Maine about Hegseth. With a history of drinking and alleged sexual assault, Hegseth sounds very much like someone enlisted in the U.S. military. Well, that's pretty much a broad generalization. I wouldn't abide by that. He would say, I would like to think officers would be better, but the prevalence of the term military sexual trauma tells me otherwise. I mean, that is a real serious issue, military sexual trauma. We'll be right back on the Todd Alba Show. I'm talking with Angela Lang, my co-host. You can join the conversation or text 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Hey there, folks. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a tip about saving money when you are renting a car. So you know how you get to the rental counter and then they ask you if you want to prepay for gas so you don't have to bring the car back full? Well, I used to get sweaty in those moments as I wasn't sure what the right money choice was. Prepaying for gas at the rental counter? Not worth it. First off, rental companies often charge more per gallon on the prepay than local gas stations do at the pump. and even if they're about equal, fees or taxes on your rental can tip the scales against prepaying. And you'd have to return that car completely empty to get the full value of buying prepaid gas. Otherwise, you're just buying gas for Avis and Budget or whoever. Quick note, make sure you have time to refill the tank before you return the rental. If you don't prepay and you don't fill up, they are going to charge you like they have refilled that car with liquid gold. For more tips, head to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You want to feel important.
You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things.
You want to feel like you belong.
We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it.
We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers.
We are normal people just like you. But our part-time service in the Army National Guard means we get to be more.
When our communities are in need, we get the chance to stand up and do something about it.
We get to serve in our own region and help the people we call neighbors.
From the lake shores of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
The fertile fields of Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa to the wide open plains of North and South Dakota.
We are here for our hometowns.
And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Alvo Show. Todd's off today, and he'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in. I'm joined by my co-host, Angela Lang, the executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Let's talk a little bit about Biden. This is his last couple days in office. He's been doing a lot this week. Yesterday, he decided to commute the sentences of 2,500 nonviolent drug offenders. Let me just give a little background here from the New York Times. President Biden announced on Friday that he'd commute the sentences of nearly, I guess he did it today, of 2,500 inmates serving long prison terms for nonviolent drug offenses, the broadest commutation of individual sentences ever issued by a U.S. president. These are for offenders who received harsher sentences for drug crimes than they would under current practices, and it was a move aimed at reversing longstanding criminal justice disparities, Biden said. So, you know, this is an issue that's been big, that, you know, the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine thing in the 80s and 90s and during the war on crime, the war on drugs. So this was a really good thing you did, didn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, for those that don't know, myself and Block have been, you know, critical of Biden considering the 94 crime bill when he was a senator. He was the author of that. And our office is in 53206. And that is one of the most incarcerated zip codes in the world because the United States incarcerates the most people. And we see how that disproportionately impacts Black and Brown folks. Like, there's very few people. I don't even think I can find anyone that hasn't been touched by the criminal justice system, whether personally or their friends and family. And we also know that a lot of these are disparities around drug crimes. Now that marijuana has started to become legalized in various states, we have still people being locked up for things that are illegal just in another state. And I think that this was long overdue. And I applaud Biden for understanding and trying to undo some of the harm that he did over, you know, 30 years ago when he was a senator.
Yeah, I think he was expressing remorse, either explicitly or implicitly, for his role there. And here's a quote from him that echoes what you were saying, Angela. "This action," said Biden, "is an important step toward righting historical wrongs, correcting sentencing disparities, and providing deserving individuals the opportunity to return to their families and communities after spending far too much time behind bars." This has been a reform that a lot of people have been advocating for. I know you and your organization has been, as well as other prisoner rights groups here in Wisconsin, Expo and Wisdom, and the ACLU and a whole bunch of other good groups have been fighting on this front. And it's good that there's a little bit of progress there. So I think, you know, this just it's just another example that, you know, Biden and he admitted this last night on Lawrence O'Donnell was a better policy president than a communication president. Some of the policies, a lot, you know, he did a lot of good. He wasn't a good salesman for those policies. And yeah. I think part of that was because his staff was worried he was going to screw up every time he'd get behind a microphone. And we saw how badly screwed up during the debate as a communicator. It wasn't just that he didn't put his name on the checks, on the $1,400 checks. That's the thing that he keeps lacerating himself for. I don't think that was the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem was he didn't have a regular, continual, ongoing conversation or relationship with the voters during his presidency, which made him seem like even more distant and impaired than he was. And so there was no way for him or his successor, Kamala Harris, as a candidate to clinch the deal. And that's what a lot of people, including me, are holding against him, that not getting out of the race and after the 2022 elections handing over the keys to the White House to Kamala Harris in 2022. And he could have just resigned and said, you know, I built the bridge. You know, I'm a transitional president. Let Kamala Harris drive here for a while. And he didn't do that. And I think at some point he'll recognize that. He doesn't seem to have recognized it yet because he keeps saying he thinks he could have won. There's no way in the world he was going to win. So,
and also, I just don't, whether people think so or not, we'll never know, right? And it's not helpful to say comments like that because then people take it as a slight against Kamala, right? And like, I get it, you know, when you've been in public office in this way, the way Biden has for the last 50 years, of course, it's going to be very, very hard for you to turn those keys over. But yeah, I think that I agree with, you know, your analysis. I think I was talking to some folks recently and people are like, what's the one thing? And I would say I think that there was a disconnect because even when Kamala became the nominee, even some of our team was like, OK, she's the vice president. That's all I know about her, right? And she had 100+ days, a little over 100 days to really kind of get that message out. And I think there's ways, and I think this is about every elected official, there's ways on the official side that people can actually continue to engage the constituents, to engage voters, even when you're not campaigning. It actually makes your campaign easier if you do that.
And look at AOC. AOC is a great example. She does it all the time on social media, constantly.
Yes. She'll be on Instagram Live talking about, you know, some sort of policy while like baking cookies and, you know, and breaking it down in a very easy to understand way. And I would like to see that more from candidates. And I think that's actually going to be necessary if people actually want to earn the voter support, who I think voters are becoming increasingly more cynical by the day. So they're going to need to go out of their way to build those relationships, especially as we come into, I hate to say it, the midterms.
Yeah. And I want to know who's going to be speaking up for the Democrats. I mean, I think Kamala Harris has a right to say that I'm the putative leader of the Democratic Party and to talk more than she has. She's been too quiet as far as I'm concerned after the election. I want to hear more from her. I want to hear more from other people who want to, you know, get that mantle. And we did hear from a texter, Carolyn Hartland, who said, I will absolutely, positively not, all caps, she's getting that from Trump, I think, watch the rapist, traitorous inauguration. So
that's how you really feel. Yeah,
seriously. But for your mental health, it may be good just not to watch it. I'm not going to watch it either. I don't recommend people. You know, I haven't watched cable TV for more than 15 minutes since the election. I just can't do
it. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Can't do it.
No, and find something else to do. And again, it's MLK Day, so I really, everybody that is not watching the inauguration, I encourage folks to find a way to live out MLK's legacy and to do an act of service or to read and reflect and do that education. There, that's a much better use of time than watching that clown car circus.
Yeah, absolutely. Celebrate MLK Day on Monday rather than watch the inauguration. You're listening to Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang on the Todd Albaugh Show, and we'll be right back with Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers. Please hang on. It's going to be a fun conversation.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With the holidays now behind us, the Class 3 milk prices took the drop that is usually expected around this time of year. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Colin Artema is here with me. He is a dairy market advisor with EverAg, and he's going to tell us what he thinks we can see within the next month when it comes to Class 3 prices.
I think for January, we certainly have a chance to be lower range down here. I don't think, since we're nearing expiration, that we're going to see anything quite drastic. Now, I think that February, March, and the beginning of Q2 definitely has a possibility of a little decrease. I'm just saying that because of the capacity that's coming online. You have more capacity for Class 3 coming online than Class 4. So
Artema says as we look into the future, we are going to want to pay attention to Easter and the Super Bowl for price increases. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at those midday markets right after this.
Just stop and listen to these great details on our next farm tour. Hi, everybody. I'm PM Yonke, inviting you to join me July 26th through August 4th as we head to the Canadian Rockies, Vancouver, Victoria, as well as agricultural highlights. We'll start in Calgary and visit their expansive Living History Museum. Then it's off to Banff for a guided tour and meet a Mountie. Next, we board a Via Rail train for phenomenal views of the Canadian Rockies. Once we arrive in Vancouver, we'll enjoy award-winning wines at Lulu Island Winery and also take a ferry to Vancouver Island for a stroll through Bouchard Gardens. We'll learn about farming life on the island during fascinating visits to a bison ranch and a dairy farm. Go to holidayvacations.com, enter keyword PAM to get a brochure or watch a travel show. Again, July 26th through August 4th, join me for our next tour of the Canadian Rockies.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report. And now let's take a look at what the markets are doing midday on this Friday. After a roller coaster of a week, it looks like the markets are going to try to end on a high note, with cash corn up 7.25 at 481.75 and new crop corn at 455.25 up 2.5. March soybeans are up 17.75 at 1036.75, and November soybeans are up 6 at 1026.75. March wheat is up 3 at 540.5, with July wheat up 2 at 561.5. Class 3 milk contracts are trying to push higher as well, with February contracts up 6 cents at 2012 hundredweight, and March contracts also up 6 cents at 1994 hundredweight. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
A cloudy but warm winter day as high temperatures try to tap 40 degrees. All ahead of a cold front sliding through this afternoon, which could spark up a few scattered snow showers and bringing breezy winds, gusting up to 30 miles per hour as temperatures fall to the single digits, with wicked wind chills slapped on top of that. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 35.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Mike Siegel. Hey, Mike.
When I look back on all those years on the road and going on two-lane highways in northern Wisconsin in the dead of winter, it could have been like 10 below outside. One deer jumps out in front of me. I was like, I'm done here.
You're in a ditch and they're not going to find you for 3 days. Dead deer carcass over there and a dead comedian carcass.
Holding his date book.
Somebody might want to call and cancel him at Zany's next week in Chicago.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Jack Smith's report. Maggie, prosecutors considered charging Trump with inciting insurrection, but didn't.
There's an old saying, if you shoot at the king, don't miss. If it's someone who's really powerful or really rich, I gotta be absolutely certain I can prove every charge beyond a reasonable doubt. When it's people that don't have means, then it's I'll throw every conceivable charge at you.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens, visit Kenosha Marketing Director Meredith Jumesko, and Bar Band Friday Nights resume with Max Inc. radio host Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Alba Show. Todd's off today. He'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, co-hosting here with Angela Lang of Block. And we have a great guest here on the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Her name is Ann Sayers. She is in the cabinet of Governor Evers. She is the tourism secretary of the state of Wisconsin. And I wanted to say that if you ever need a deputy, Todd might be someone you'd hire as deputy, because he goes all over Wisconsin all the time, promoting every nook and cranny of the state. And anyway, I'm not suggesting he wants to leave Civic Media and join your department, but he is doing a lot to stir up tourism in Wisconsin himself. And anyhow, Secretary Sayers, welcome to the program. It's great to see you and be with you.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I love it. Todd's an ambassador for Wisconsin tourism. That's perfect.
Totally an ambassador. He goes on the road. Sam, what is it? He goes on the road every other week practically.
Yeah, just about. He's always exploring some new place.
Yeah, it's fun to tune in and hear him. He's from Richland Center, so he talks about, you know, southwestern Wisconsin a lot too. But he's been to Amory. He's been all over the place. So... tell us, first of all, how do you like your job?
Oh, it's such an honor to be in this position. And we always talk about, you know, to bring it back to your why. And what's really neat about being in tourism is there's really two whys. It's the one is about offering these opportunities to our residents or our out-of-state visitors and encouraging them to use their vacation days to do this thing for themselves, go explore something new, be, you know, spend time with your family, be inspired by art, try a new food. It's so fun to be a part of encouraging that. But on the other side of it, it's all about the fact that doing that is good for our state. It brings revenue in and it makes it possible for decision makers to then decide what to do with it, build some roads, improve our schools, provide some healthcare, whatever you want to do with the revenue that tourism can help generate. So there's two really important reasons why this work is so important. It's so fulfilling, and our entire agency, which is small, by the way, but all of us are really motivated by that every day.
And you've been generating a lot of revenue, record-breaking tourism revenue, right? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, in 2019, we set a record, and we were going into 2020. We're going to host the Ryder Cup, and it was going to be, you know, but blah, blah, blah. Didn't go as we thought. But we really sprang back. We surged back faster in 21 than any of our neighbors. And then in 22, we broke a record for revenue, economic impact ever in the state of Wisconsin via tourism. And then we did it again in 2023. So tourism had two record-breaking back-to-back years, but so has outdoor recreation, which is a whole economy unto itself. And it's measured a little bit differently, but that one too. And we're proud of both, of course, but I don't think everyone knows that the Office of Outdoor Recreation sits within the Department of Tourism. So we're really trying to hold up both of these economies. And it's just great to see that people are responding to what Wisconsin has to offer and how we've been pitching it to them.
What are some of the biggest tourism attractions here in Wisconsin for people who come from out of state, for instance?
Yeah, it's there's so many answers to that question, but we follow the data. And one thing we always see is that outdoor recreation and events are at the top of the list of the reason that people come to Wisconsin. And we do both so, so well. And recently, we've also been adding these really large scale marquee events that Wisconsin didn't always get. So suddenly now we've hosted sort of the DNC, definitely the RNC. We had the Ryder Cup. We had... the U.S. Senior Open, and now we have the NFL draft right around the corner. And this year, last year, I should say, we had Top Chef, which is kind of, that was a big win. 12 episodes, 75 minutes each, all in Wisconsin, showing off our culinary history. Definitely put Wisconsin in a different place in the national eye of a potential visitor.
And outdoor activities, that's hunting and fishing and hiking and camping mostly?
It is, but you know, in Wisconsin, it can also be rock climbing. It can be snowmobiling, ATVing, hunt fish. Surfing is a whole thing.
Really?
And birding, of course, Matt, which I know you care about.
Yeah, yeah, bird watching. You know, I think there's more upside to come from birding, though. I'm of two minds because, you know, us bird watchers, sometimes we don't like to broadcast how great the birding is in Wisconsin because we don't want half Illinois coming up here and scaring the birds away.
I have the exact same problem with everything. All of our, you know, well-kept secrets in tourism, you don't. What? Well-kept secrets? My job's to tell everyone to come look at all of this stuff, but I know what you're saying.
But the let me just jump in on birds a second, and then I'll turn it over to you, Angela, because the birding here is amazing. I can't, no. I mean,
there I love are it.
Whooping cranes in the summer at Horicon Marsh. There are golden eagles in the winter here in Wisconsin at Devil's Lake and over to on Highway 60 going west along the Wisconsin River. To Muscadet, they're golden eagles. People used to not know that there were golden eagles in Wisconsin in the wintertime. And so those are some of the incredible things. There are all sorts of great birds in the state. And, yeah, we'd be overrun by tourists from Chicago and elsewhere if we really broadcast it loudly and clearly. Angela, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because there's so many great, like, attractions, whether it's, like, outside or inside, obviously, I am from Milwaukee, so not to put you on the spot, but what are some of your like favorite Milwaukee attractions, whether it's a festival or a restaurant or one of your favorite things to do in Milwaukee?
Oh my gosh. Okay. This is a fun question. Well, one thing that I am talking about a lot these days is the Harley-Davidson Museum, which sounds like, oh, if I'm not into motorcycles, maybe that's not my thing. It totally is. It's a real museum. Talking about how Harleys played a role in American history through some of the wars. It has one of Elvis's Harleys there. It has a Harley that washed up on the shore after the Fukushima accident, and it kind of shows what happened to that bike as it traveled across the ocean. It's surprisingly engaging. I just couldn't. And now I'm a little bit obsessed with Harleys, but I guess I'm not a little bit, I'm like a lot. And I think that's the whole point. It was the whole point of museums. So I really encourage folks. And what was really cool, I was there. A guy pulled up on his Harley from Kansas. He had come. I almost thought, it's like, did somebody set this up? So just while I happen to be standing here, this guy rolls in on his license plate from Kansas Harley. And he's like, I'm making a pilgrimage here to the Harley-Davidson Museum. This is so important to me. And of course, he's going to stay in a Milwaukee hotel. He's going to take in some Milwaukee culinary. He's probably going to take in some Milwaukee entertainment. And suddenly, you know, he becomes an ambassador for how amazing Milwaukee is.
I mean, what I'm hearing you say, Anne, is that you are going to get a Harley and we're going to see you at the next Harley Fest.
Definitely. This is on my vision board.
I love that. I mean, Harley Fest is great. And I live in the area, like off of Brady Street. And, you know, there's always a lot of people in the Facebook groups that are like, it's so loud. But like, honestly, like the Harley folks are so nice. I've seen them come in for years. Nice. When my mom used to work at a hotel, she used to see them all the time. And she said that they were always, you know, the nicest people. And, you know, I think of that as like kind of one of the unique things that Milwaukee has. And I'm not a Harley person myself, but my friend and I, we went to Harley Fest a couple years ago because we wanted to see the Green Day concert and we had a blast and it was fun. And, you know, there's just so many things to do, whether it's like your thing or not. I think that's like the beautiful thing about Milwaukee and by extension, Wisconsin, like finding new things and then seeing like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. I learned a new thing that I didn't know about in my own hometown or in my own state.
Right. And they are great community players, like the Green Day thing. It just brought everybody together. It's this great uniter. But that's, you know, same goes for Summer Fest. Same goes for Chef Dan Jacobs, who, you know, has received all this notoriety for having been on Top Chef. But he made that all about his home. At every opportunity, he made that about, I want to tell my story of Milwaukee. It's so special. Same for Bronzeville and how that's inviting the entire community and the entire state and all of our out-of-state visitors in. There's always this sense of community about how Milwaukee tourism attractions operate. So it's so Wisconsin.
And the Milwaukee Art Museum is another draw. I know my brother and sister-in-law from the Chicago area come up once a year and we meet at the art museum and then go out to a good restaurant. And it's an incredible, first of all, the architecture is just so stunning of the art museum there. Mm-hmm. And the collections are great. So, yeah, there's just so much. I was talking with Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show months ago, and he was responding to Republicans who stereotype Milwaukee all the time and do scare tactics about Milwaukee. He said, you should come to Milwaukee. People come to Milwaukee all the time for Summerfest or watch the Bucks or watch the Brewers or go to restaurants or go to the art museums. I mean, it is a huge attraction, I think, for people, even, you know, snobs from Chicago who come up here.
I'm glad you named the art museum, because that's one of those places where I don't want people to think, oh, I've been once and that's that.
Yes.
You've got to keep going. The exhibitions they keep bringing in are incredible, world class. They're always making updates, and I think they just doubled the size of the gift shop, which is museum gift shops are kind of my kryptonite. So love it. It's beautiful. More plans on the horizon. So definitely, if you haven't been there in a minute, get back.
Yeah, that's great. That's like a reminder for me, because I'm like, I love the art museum. Sometimes it's just like good to go on just like a random day by yourself. I'm also like a fan of just like exploring the city on my own and be like, I'm going to take myself out to dinner, or I'm going to take myself out to this museum. And I think that's like a perfect thing to do. And there's, like you said, there's always so much to do and to see all the time. And what I also appreciate is that a lot of our attractions, whether it's like museums or what have you, there's a lot of specials. So like, it's affordable for families to go, and there's various like deals and stuff too. I don't know if you want to be able to talk about some of those things, about how tourism is able to be accessible even for the local folks.
Yeah, we're really proud of that in Wisconsin. We find that a lot of our visitors are, we're a drive market. So they're driving in from Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota. And part of the reason we can be so attractive to a family who wants to make lifelong memories but not break the bank is because we have all of these offerings. And one place we score really high in the eyes of a tourist is so much to see and do. So you can really pack in a lot. And some of that is just full-blown free, if not just, you know, very affordable, from the unique places that you can stay, the kind of amazing culinary you can find at a great price point, to, you know, outdoor recreation is often just free entry, or some of these museums, children's museums and other things like that. We try to, you know, Wisconsin goes out of its way to make it really accessible.
Again, the state parks are great. I know Todd Alba had a whole segment on, you know, what's your favorite state park, and people were texting in and calling in. You know, Wyalusing State Park, Devil's Lake State Park, Peninsula State Park, you name it. You know, I've been in the state for 40 some years now, and it's still, I'm still going to a new state park. I went to Kohler Andre State Park just in the fall. It was an incredible place. And so it's amazing what we have to offer, and you're doing so much, Secretary Sayers, to promote this state, both for people in Wisconsin to enjoy it and for people out of state. I mean, you mentioned you're bringing in money. You didn't cite a figure. I saw a figure of $25 billion in 2023. That's a chunk of change.
It's a chunk of change. And our, you know, just for comparison, our state agency is $18 million. It's less than 0.5% of the state's budget, holding up a $25 billion industry. And my favorite statistic is each household in Wisconsin would have to pay an additional $660 a year in order to maintain the level of government services that are maintained by the tourism revenue.
That's a nice return on investment. Great return on investment you're giving us.
And I was going to go back to what Angela said about wellness, like just kind of like taking a day and hanging out with you. You know, that's actually a really big emerging trend right now. And Wisconsin is kind of stepping into the wellness space. And I love that for us, because, you know, I think we are kind of up against a perception of kind of being like loud, cheesy sports fans, and like that's not wrong, and we're really proud of it. But we also have made space for these quieter moments, are just a place to recharge, and that has a lot to do with our arts and culture scene, and again, back to just having, you know, two great lakes and the Mississippi River and more than 10,000 inland lakes and 50% of the state covered in forests. This is a great place to come and recharge.
Well, we're lucky to have you there at the Department of Tourism. Ann Sayers, Secretary of Tourism for Wisconsin, thanks so much for being our guest on the Todd Alba Show.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
So good to see you, Ann.
Take care.
And we'll be right back. Maybe we'll talk about the ERA and what Biden just did about that.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Albo Show. Todd's off today. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, your substitute teacher today, and my co-substitute teacher is Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. It was great to have Ann Sayers on, wasn't it, Angela?
I had no idea some of those statistics. Like, I, as a lovely, you know, participant of all of the things that they're doing, I had no idea, like, the scale, level, and numbers of impact. And I'm just over here just going to various things because I want to, but knowing that it's actually a big driver. So I think it's just encouraging for all the listeners of, like, keep visiting the parks, keep visiting all these different things, especially in Milwaukee. Like, I know there can be sometimes some stereotypes. We are not big, bad, and scary. There's a lot of great things to do in Milwaukee and have a good time.
Yeah, I can't think of a better salesperson for the state of Wisconsin than Ann Sayers. So it's great to have her there.
Seeing her travels too, yeah, around, like, social media. She's posting pictures of, like, I'm fishing with, like, right, the governor's team and other stuff. It's been so great to kind of watch her Wisconsin adventures too unfold.
Yeah, there she was in Spring Green and, you know, all over the place. I gave her a birding tip for a blue grosbeak that I've never seen, but was supposed to be over there in the Spring Green area. Anyway, we've got a couple texters. The Chuckster from Racine wants to know about the Equal Rights Amendment, and we'll get to that in a second. Eric from Tosa says he'll be honoring Dr. King on Monday. It's Dr. King Day on Monday, so I'm glad he'll be doing that. Self-care will be important, he says, as the arc toward justice is going to bend backward that day. That is a tough one because, of course, that's the big Martin Luther King line about the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice.
When is it bending back? I feel like we've been bending away from justice. And I was like, okay, you can bend back now. When does that start?
When's it coming back around? Yeah, it isn't my favorite Martin Luther King quote, I got to say, because there's so many ups and downs in history. I get what he was getting at. And you got to offer people, you know, that vision and that hope. But
yeah,
It is troublesome when you look at the last 10 years. You can look at the last 100 years, and there's been a lot of bouncing around. So Eric from Tulsa also says, what are the odds the incoming commander-in-chief brings it up? I guess that's Martin Luther King Day to brag about it. He might. You know, there's no bottom that this guy won't touch. So he can claim anything. But you can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We wanted to talk about what President Biden declared today, and that is that the ERA is ratified, he said. He believes the Equal Rights Amendment has met the requirements of ratification. And therefore is now part of the Constitution, the New York Times reports. But Biden declined to order the government to finalize the process by officially publishing it, which is curious. And evidently there'll be a bunch of lawsuits about this or not. There's a question about, you know, they finally got enough states to come across, but some states have already rescinded their approval of the ERA. And the ERA is a flashback for me because it's, you know, 1970s. I mean, I was in high school at that point and heard about the ERA and then Phyllis Schlafly opposing the ERA. So it's kind of a relic. And I saw on Facebook like a week ago, someone brought up the ERA and I didn't even know what that person was talking about, but I guess Biden did because he just went and pulled the trigger on this. What do you make of it, Angela?
I mean, I'm encouraged. I think, you know, when I was looking at some of it, people are, I think the Times says, Biden says Equal Rights Amendment has passed, but does not force certification. So, you know, I think some folks initially are saying that it's a little more symbolic and that we all just, like everything in this country, just need to be prepared for whatever legal fight continues and whatever legal battles. And I think that's discouraging, but I think it does send a very strong, I think, reminder that there's going to be a lot of LGBT attacks, I think, and especially against like trans folks. And I think this just says that we need to be prepared and be ready to stand with our LGBT community too.
Definitely that. I mean, it is crazy that, you know, it's been 50 years and we still cannot declare as part of our Constitution that the equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex. That's the language of the ERA amendment. It's not that controversial, folks.
It's not. But yet here we are. We can never get anything passed. And I think also is, you know, thinking about, there's just so many, I think, marginalized folks right now that are going to be under attack. And I think it's just something that we all need to make sure that we are, you know, supporting, whether it's women, like I said, LGBT folks, because I think once they start to go for one community, they're going to go for another. Immigrants, you know, we've seen it in Milwaukee and ICE talking about trying to expand and build a processing center, but they want to build a fence around it so it looks a little suspicious. And, you know, I think a lot of times in these conversations, people are like, well, this doesn't have to do with me or I'm not directly impacted. And but that doesn't mean that we still shouldn't show up for each other, because if it happens to one community and people, especially the Trump administration, can get away with taking away the rights of one community, the rest are going to continue as well. And, you know, it's with women. We've seen it. We've seen all the imagery and symbolism around things like The Handmaid's Tale. And is that where we're actually going? And I think all of these things are connected, and understanding the intersections. And I'm hoping that we all, you know, as folks that are part of pushing back and the resistance, are, you know, going from one fight to another collectively. And it's not just forcing folks that are directly impacted to be standing alone, fighting for their own rights, too.
Absolutely. We've got to show up for each other. There is a great group in Wisconsin called Fair Wisconsin that is defending LGBT rights. And the ACLU and other groups are doing it as well. League of Women Voters, a whole bunch of groups, including Block, are doing it. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone will join in those efforts. You're listening to the Todd Albo Show. We'll be right back with the new Poet Laureate of Wisconsin, Brenda Cardenas. Will be joining us right after the break on the Todd Albo Show, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Hey folks, Jimmy K here from Max Inc. Radio. Join me this weekend as I welcome Isaiah and the new people. Plus, Terry chats with jazz musician Janet Plant. It's Max Inc. Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
it? No, not at all.
In the Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again? Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration Monday will be indoors in the Capitol Rotunda. CBS's Scott McFarlane explains why.
Temperatures here are going to be particularly brutal Monday. It is also a possibility of a Sunday night snow event, which makes things very dicey in the congested city of Washington, D.C.
The Supreme Court has upheld the law banning TikTok unless its Chinese owner sells the app to an American company. CBS News legal contributor Carolyn Polisi says TikTok fans shouldn't count on Trump to save the app.
This idea that Trump could potentially sign an executive order and sort of wave a magic wand is not legally accurate.
CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem says Israel's full cabinet is expected to approve the ceasefire deal with Hamas.
Prime Minister Netanyahu actually put out a statement saying that it will begin on Sunday when we expect to see the release of three female Israeli hostages.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallen.